Thank you, Eric and Worship Committee. It is an honor and a pleasure to be invited to talk. And I know Michelle's a hard act to follow, so I'm just going to talk about something else. So today's sermon is about my spiritual search. I'm going to tell stories, some of which you've heard before if you were in some classes with me. I apologize if you've heard them before. I will set the tone with a snippet from the 80s. I started considering getting an answering machine when I was still at the university because I was needing it. So what did I do about it? Did I go down to the store, make an answering machine, set it up, and let it run? Nope. Not at all. For months and months and months, I just sat on it and said, Lena, I'm home. If I'm not home, it's not that important. I can wait. I can wait. As a consequence of this, I realize now, I continued to render myself unavailable to people, and I missed out on stuff, events, gatherings, friends, family. The reason why I did this is because I thought, what if I get an answering machine and I set it up and nobody calls me? Turns out that with that attitude, if you apply that attitude to matters of the spirit, you don't end up getting where you want to go, where you can go, where you should go. Now I know that I've been on a spiritual path for all my life. And although sometimes it doesn't seem like I was on one, because of that, I didn't dwell on why it didn't seem like I pay so much attention to my spiritual life. So more stories. The Sunday of my first communion, I'm recovering Catholic like most of you. As I sat in the front pew with all the other children, I'm praying as hard as I can for Jesus to help me get the holy wafer unstuck from my retainer without having to touch it because it's holy, so that I can be capital S saved. I had taken catechism previous 9 months, preparation of that, and I found it boring and gruesome. I'm from Italy. They hold nothing back. So the priest that taught catechism kept saying, come on, you have to make a home in your heart for Jesus. Okay, but I really did not want to think about the suffering man on the cross with the blood and spit upon and suffering with the things and the gory things and crown of thorns. How can my little heart make it better for him? How can I make a better suffering? I didn't know. I was sad. I was slightly grossed out. I had no answer to that. I was trying. I tried as hard as an 8-year-old can to pray, repent, make a room, try. But nothing. I mean, I did the best. And I still hoped. I still hoped that I could be capital S saved. And then being saved, in my mind, meant angels coming down from heaven. Oh, you did it. Just as I was taking a first communion, you're awesome. Jesus saying, yes, your heart is cozy. You made a very good home for me. But in that awkward moment where the hose was stuck in my retainer, no choir of angels, no voice of Jesus, nothing. Nothing helped me. I was just me. It was just another day. Nothing miraculous happened. So let's fast forward to my high school years. I decided that I hadn't been capital S saved during my first communion because I was not mature enough. I did not know philosophy. And now that I knew all about St. Thomas Aquinas, by golly, I thought it was time to try again. I wanted to give myself over to the Holy Spirit, which is kind of ironic in this place that I'm talking about the Trinity. But really, Aquinas had me convinced. The Holy Spirit is the way to true revelation, to the knowing the truth. So I embarked into another 9 months of preparation, which again was boring, but not as gruesome because we're talking about more theological stuff for confirmation. But truth be told, even though I thought I was so much more mature at 15 than I was at 8, I envisioned a similar scenario after being anointed. All my questions would magically be answered. I would start to speak in tongues like the apostles, and I would do better in my English tests. Again, Italian is my first language. As you can imagine, none of this happened. I wouldn't be here telling you about it because it's kind of humorous. It didn't happen. I don't know Lebanese. I don't know Arabic. You know, there was no miracle. The Spirit didn't come in my head. I mean, it's in the head that it comes, right? It's, well, whatever. Nothing. No speaking in tongues, no miracle, no Spirit. Just me. Just another day. Very disappointing. At this point, or around this point, I kind of opted out of the Catholic Church. It wasn't anything official. I just told myself that I wanted to explore other things, like having a boyfriend, being an atheist. But really, I was tired of trying to wait for faith to come to me and tired of disappointing results. So eventually I chose science, which was much better in terms of truth. And I stopped asking what now I know are theological questions that were important to me. I just moved them away. And to quote Leonard Cohen, I was young and I had the music, so that was enough, for a while anyway. But these questions, these theological questions, we all have them. We don't know that they're theological, but we all have them. They can't be quashed together. If you don't have an outlet for this, you're going to end up with neurosis. I really believe in what Carl Jung says, and I really believe that is true because it happened to me. So many years later, having ruled out anything Judeo-Christian out of principle, I approached a Buddhist practice. I am still a Buddhist. Now, there you go, I came out. Although I'm not really practicing, because I'm so good at it, no. So, I like that faith a whole lot. I like that doesn't pose the question of God, and it's non-theist religion. I like the idea of reincarnation, although Buddhism is not the only one that has that idea. I like the emphasis on compassion. So I went through the whole thing, sat on the cushion, meditated, and took the vows. I even took the one that says that I will wait for my own enlightenment until every sentient being on this earth has attained enlightenment. And I remember that every morning when I wake up, and I try to live by that. But it's hard. So anyways, all this practicing and meditating and looking at myself from the cushion did do me a lot of good and bring me some peace, but is that it? So now I'm well with all there is? Is that the end of my sermon? Ha ha, no such luck. I have one more story. I made friends with a woman, I'll call her Jane, who was an instructor at the Buddhist center where I practiced. She had met the guru. She had been on mountain retreats, alone retreats, for months and months and months. I mean, she did the whole thing. And so I started hanging out with her. We went to the gym. We talked about topics in Buddhism. She was so wise. I kind of wanted to be like her. I admire her a great deal. She had all the right answers. She had all the right practices. And I thought I wanted to be as advanced as her because I was still a newbie. I hadn't done a mountain retreat. I hadn't turned green from just eating grass, if you know, Milarepa, anyway. And at that point, I had something really upsetting in my life, and meditation didn't help me at all. It made it worse. So I thought she could help me. So one day, out of the blue, I hadn't seen her for a while, she calls me. And she was a complete and utter mess. I couldn't believe it. She told me she had not been around because she tried to kill herself. She has spent the previous week, week and a half, 2 weeks, I don't remember how long it was, in a drunken stupor because her husband left her. And she was completely unable to handle any of this. Nothing to help her cope with this loss, with this situation in her life. And I felt bad. I didn't know what to do. She dismissed my friendship. She went out of my life. I found out a while later that she was fine. She had gotten herself together. But at that point, I was out of her life. And the fact remains that as advanced as she was, she checked all the boxes. It seemed to me that anything she did previous to her for her spiritual practice had no effect in real life for her. So while I remained a Buddhist, I took a long break from practice. So these are three episodes from my life with slightly different approaches, but at the end I found asking myself the same question, what if one goes through a lot of preparation and trouble to get a spiritual life, and when one needs it or wants it or counts on it being there, it's not there? What if you go through the trouble of setting up an answering machine and nobody calls you? And so this is the belief that I've had for the longest time. It's a belief that percolated through my all attempts of spiritual nourishment until I was starved from nourishment. And this is a belief that says, spirituality, get over it, give it up, not important, move on. Believing that no solace can come from spiritual practice can block that primal reverence that I read about, that fundamental awe for nature, for the beauty of everyday life, that deep-rooted appreciation of life, art, and beauty. It takes away a lot, I would say, all of what it means to be human and be alive on this earth. It takes away the present moment because you don't know how to appreciate it. But it was such a deeply held belief until a year ago that prevented me from acknowledging the existence of a pretty essential part of me. So my spirit was starving, and I didn't even know it. So what happened a year ago? A year ago is when we stepped through the doors of this place. This special place, like Stephen Mead calls it. After the first Sunday we came here, we kept coming religiously, which, haha, it's, we kind of did though. Because things were happening to me, I can only speak for myself. I don't speak for the rest of my family, but things were happening to me when I was at church that felt weird, unprecedented. But these weird things and unprecedented things that made me want to come back every week were the reason I kept coming back. Before I even could examine it in my head, that was the reason. I wanted more, so I think Kleber suggested we sign up for UU and you. And a whole new perspective opened up for me about how to approach religion and how to approach spiritual matters. So here's the first thing, one of the early things, one of the most impressive things that happened to me during one of these classes, our minister Kleber turned my deep-rooted skeptical view about the answering machine on his head. I share with him the same tale of the holy wafer that I just told you. And after chuckling and hearing about my expectations of angels and Jesus coming down and saying, hey, you're saved, blah, 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 he asked me, so did you not think you were special before? Didn't you know you're already one of God's miracles? Wow. No, that never occurred to me. This really stopped me I didn't know what to do. It was an easy question, and I was just like, whoa, no, I never saw it that way. And now when I do, it makes a lot of sense, because I've been thinking about it for a year. So reflecting further, I think the moment when he asked that question, you can identify about 5 of the 7 principles of the UU faith. And here we go. Before I go into it, just to clarify, it's not just the question. It's the present moment when we were in that class, me, him, all the other people in the class. Let's go through them. So the question itself is the first principle. That was the explicit statement that I was important and I had inherent human dignity. The second, it's be kind in all you do. That was Kleber's act of asking me that question. He was being kind. The third principle was there because of the venue. We were in a class and we were free to learn together. The fourth had to do with my spiritual search in general. I had been searching for what was true, and my search, with all its disappointments and pitfalls, was legitimate. And last but not least, the whole moment in time, that capsule there, had me realize I needed a voice, and I was finding one at that point. 5 out of 7 isn't bad. You can cram the other 2 into it, but it becomes sort of like a kind of a pointless exercise anyway. So that's it. That moment was the true rite of passage for me to becoming a Unitarian Universalist seeker. So naturally, I didn't realize this at the moment that it happened. I realized it about last Tuesday at like 9 o'clock at night when I was writing this. Okay. So that's it. It was one. There's more. There's one more thing. It's not just that I find Kleber inspirational. I do, but that's only part of it. This is a church made of all of us people. From this church made of people, I learned that when you take dogma away from spirituality and allow people to be with their beliefs and to be together, we can work toward common goals. There are a lot of jokes that are made about how Unitarians come to church for coffee hours, and some of them are pretty funny. But the reality is that when a church becomes a community, you want to stay there and share your thoughts and hopes and dreams and your whole life with others. We are the fabric of this church. This is a fact, and it's not just social, but also social. It's essential for spiritual growth. For example, now, when I cry at church, and Bob, I wasn't going to mention your name, when I have sensations, I think it's okay. I don't think I'm weird, because I shared my experience, and somebody, you, Bob, have told me that it's okay to have it. I'm accepted here just as I am, and I don't need any angels coming down and start singing to me, and I know that I'm safe here. So I started writing these few sentences of my sermon about 2 weeks ago after a long day at work. And were just a few disconnected thoughts at how grateful I was that I was asked to give a sermon here. And it immediately became obvious to me that it means a lot to me to be here with you right now in this moment. And I've been so proud to be writing this, that despite having had the past 2 weeks of 12-hour day work days, I could still find the energy, and in fact, it recharged me to write words about this sermon and to think about it. Being here with you brings out the best in me and gives me strength for the outside of these stained glass windows, for the next day, and more special things and have happened to my spirit in the past year of church going than previously in all of my life. This makes my life not just more bearable, but more meaningful. And I don't care where the spirit is, if it's my mind, my spirit, God, whatever, I don't care what is happening as long as it is happening. This is where the sermon ended. until I thought of myself last year, giving it one last try to try to seek something, to try to feed my soul. One desperate attempt that I didn't even know was one last desperate last-ditch attempt. So at the end of the sermon, I want to speak to the newcomers, if we have any here. I hope that if you're a newcomer to this place, accepting smiling and smiling faces that greeted you this morning, that there were or there are going to be, if you just joined us today, those of us to show you where things are and to make you feel at home during coffee hours and potluck. Apparently we have one today. This is exactly what happened to us a year ago. And maybe not today, but maybe also today, by coming to church and hearing a variety of people speak on a variety of topics that matter to them and speak from their heart, I hope you can glean what we're all about. A church full of people who work for a common goal, but each in their own way. So thanks for listening, and I love you all.